Thank you, Ignacio, for the introduction. As Ignacio mentioned, I work for the International Plant Nutrition Institute, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to speak to you today about some of my thoughts on the application of modeling of models of the soil and crop system to the particular question of determining the optimum rate for nitrogen. Most of my examples will involve nitrogen and corn. I'm also going to cover a little bit on phosphorus as well. A little bit about my background that may influence what you see in this presentation. I grew up on a farm in southern Ontario. I got my first degrees in agriculture from the University of Guelph and was introduced to modeling by Thijs Tollenaar, sort of on the crop side. So got used to the working with models in terms of the nitty-gritty. I have to confess that I haven't really written anything in basic code in the last 10 years or so, but I have got acquainted with what I think is a fundamental limitation in the acceptance of models, and that is that we really need to get the user to understand a model before they're going to be able to trust the results, and that's the reason for the word credibility here in the title. The organization I work for is a not-for-profit organization, but it does receive most of its funding from the fertilizer industry, and our member companies are listed on this slide. The mission of the International Plant Nutrition Institute is promoting scientific information on responsible management of plant nutrition. As an outline, I'm going to talk a little bit about show you some data that gives us a good feeling for the size and scope of the weather effect on nitrogen. And then I'm going to talk about some experiences from interviewing a few selected crop advisors working in the northeastern part of North America and what their experiences have been in using modeling tools in adaptive management for nitrogen. I'll make some comments as well on application of modeling to phosphorus and then talk about linkage to sustainability as well. The data shown here, these box and whisker plots more or less represent the variability seen in optimum nitrogen rates across the province of Quebec. This is dozens of trials conducted each year from 1997 to 2005 in the province of Quebec. And you can see the median bar there. The median optimal rate across these trials varied tremendously year to year. If you think about an individual field within that same province, you'd probably expect even greater variability. You certainly wouldn't expect less, because here you're averaging across a number of trials each year. And we see that variability has a range of about 100 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen. That's a very substantial amount of nitrogen. Here I'm looking at some response data from a single trial conducted in Elora, Ontario. And in fact, this is work that I'm doing in cooperation with Dr. Bill Dean at the University of Guelph, who's here in the audience today. And these are the first 5 years of a long-term corn nitrogen response experiment. And what we're seeing here is certainly for the first few years, 2009, I'm going to try using the mouse as we were instructed to do, but I'm not sure whether this mouse is going to be oversensitive to my touch, but you can see that the first 3 years, the responses didn't differ that terribly much, but then we had a drought year in 2012 with a very substantially different response to nitrogen. It was still important to use nitrogen, but you certainly could get by with it a lot less, and the yield potential was cut tremendously as well. The following year, our expectation following a drought year is you normally expect the birch effect, plentiful nitrogen to be around, and you expect probably good yields and not that great a requirement for nitrogen. And that, in fact, visually, looking at the crop up till mid-June, that's what we saw. There's very, very little difference in response to nitrogen applied in crop color. But then we had the end of June and early July, very large rainfall events, quite unusual rainfall events, and you'll see in some of my following slides as well, it was not just Ontario, but New York and Ohio experienced the same thing as well. And we ended up with tremendous yields that year, but also a tremendous response to nitrogen. In fact, the difference between the last two rates here proved to be, in fact, statistically significant. So the variation in economic optimum rate here, calculated at a single price ratio, was 140 to 250 kilograms per hectare. Considerable variation year to year. Nothing else was different in these 5 years. It was the same hybrid, the same plot of land. It was the plots were arranged so that there was both long-term and short-term effects accounted for, and these are true response curves. And we can attribute all of this variation, essentially, to weather. Our current recommendations really don't address it. Some come close. You can use a pre-sidress nitrate test as a supplement to the conventional recommendations, and it might catch some of this variability. You can adjust for price ratio, and I'll show you with the current Ontario nitrogen calculator, and that may address some of the variability as well. When I look at that same time period, over that five years, the price ratio of corn to fertilizer varied from about 5 to 10.5 or so. And 10.5 means 10 units of corn required to buy 1 unit of fertilizer. That means relatively expensive fertilizer. And interestingly enough, I did an analysis similar to this about 10 years ago, looking at a former period, and the range in price ratios actually encountered was very similar, 5 to 10.5 or so. So that's about the range that is encountered by growers. Adjusting for price ratios, you could see that if you compare the left-hand side of the figure here to the right-hand side of the figure, the relative change in the amount that you would apply, then you compare that to the difference in the response curves among the years, you see about 4 times more difference in actual adjustment for weather among years than you would for price ratio alone. When you actually analyze the profit differences, it's a fairly complex analysis here, but you can see for each year I've listed a price ratio. I've listed an optimum rate based on that price ratio, based on the actual fitted curve, which we don't know until we actually harvest the corn. That's what we would love to be able to predict, but we aren't able to predict. I've got the economic optimum rate at a fixed price ratio of 6.7, which happens to be the average of the five-year period. And then the optimum rate, or the recommended rate predicted by the Ontario Nitrogen Calculator, which takes quite a few factors into account and is the best prediction that we have so far for Ontario corn. And that has a price ratio factor in it as well. And you can see that the rates that are recommended there, I've calculated then 2 differences. The difference in adjusting for price ratio when you are actually already at the economic, when you know the actual response curve. And you can see that over the 5 years, that averages out to $1.43 per year. And the 1 year where you actually would have made something that you could consider worthwhile was the year that fertilizer was very expensive. You might have saved $5.30 per hectare by reducing your rate just a little bit there. $5.30 per hectare is probably not an amount that farmers would really take notice of. But the difference between what we're actually predicting and the actual response curve, you can see averages out to $47. That's largely driven by that huge response we had in the 2013 year. That's often what drives farmers' perceptions of what rate they ought to apply. They never know when they're going to get a year like 2013. What were the unique features of that year? I mentioned already that there was a heavy rainfall in that year. There was another thing that high yield critically depended upon, and that was a really good fall growth period. This same site in Elora in 1982 had a killing frost before the end of August. If that had occurred, that response curve wouldn't have been there. So another thing a weather model could provide us is a probability of that frost reoccurring. We don't know whether climate change has solved that problem for us. I don't think it's been totally eliminated, but we always live with some worry that an early killing frost could be limiting our yields. So that was looking just on a single field scale, variability year to year, and you know what potential we have to address it. There's another study recently published, done by Nicolas Tremblay and a host of colleagues, stretching across the Corn Belt right down to Mexico. So this goes all the way from Quebec to Mexico. And they looked at a number of sites all run using uniform methodology and looking at nitrogen response ratios, the ratio of the yield of the check of the fertilized plot, a well-fertilized plot to a check, and then looking at weather factors that might have influenced that response. The interesting thing was they found an interaction between the soil textures at the site, the soil textural class, and a factor that they calculated from the precipitation data called abundant and well-distributed rainfall, defined during a period just prior, pretty well from planting to the V6 growth stage. And when you look at that, what falls out is that with fine soils, when you have high rainfall, you have a high susceptibility to nitrogen loss, a high probability of a very strong response to nitrogen. And this sort of validates across a very broad scale of corn production the importance of early season rainfall being taken into account if we're going to be able to fine-tune nitrogen recommendations. So the reasons, I think, for a modeling approach is that it's not just about predicting crop demand. It's not just about predicting what supply of nitrogen will come from the soil. And it's not just about predicting what the soil nitrogen losses are. All three of those areas are governed by weather. There are complex processes within all of them that influence what they're going to be through that season. And they're driven by past weather, by the current weather, and the forecast weather. If we use a modeling approach, we can make the user experience quite easy. Because if it's all done in the cloud and it's automated with a computer, it can be simply getting the data up there and getting the answer back, rather than having to actually go and do a test, which may or not be able to be done because of weather conditions themselves as well. The modeling approach can also integrate information from samplings that is done, and can integrate information even from visual observation. Nitrogen and phosphorus will differ. I think we have good examples where we're trying to actually predict the optimum rate each year for nitrogen. Whether we can do that for phosphorus is, to me, an open question. I haven't seen anyone try to address the actual phosphorus response prediction based on weather. But there is an important aspect of phosphorus management that is known to be highly related to weather, and that's if we do phosphorus by the typical broadcast application, what's the probability of it running off, contributing to excess phosphorus in runoff? And I'll talk about that a little bit as we move along here. So IPNI has adopted as one of its strategies for the future to support the development of decision support systems that account for weather. We published a few years ago the results of a symposium in 2006 where we focused on managing crop nitrogen for weather and asked scientists from around the world to present their results in terms of what they were doing to develop models that accommodated weather into nitrogen predictions. Since that time, the development of on-farm weather measurement stations has really progressed. You can now, for less than $2,000, purchase a unit that gives you fairly complete weather data and uploads it to the web every 5 minutes. That's beyond the capacity of any plant growth model that I've worked with. I was working in the days of the daily time step. if we could really address the data that could potentially be made available, I think we could develop some very strong tools. And in terms of forecasting, everyone always questions forecasts, but they still look at them every morning. And there is some plausible data that says that forecasts are actually improving, according to this article from Science in 2012. So I want to look at a few, just mention that there are a number of initiatives underway. A lot of them have started fairly recently. There's an empirical approach based on Nicola Tremblay's paper in 2012. Shabtai Bittman in Canada is working on a model called NLOS, implemented in the Stella language, and that apparently is quite interesting as well. I haven't been able to spend a whole lot of time on that yet. Climate Corp with Monsanto has a nitrogen yield nitrogen advisor, and Encirca with DuPont, Pioneer, 360 Commander. All of them have been announced within the last few years. The one that's been probably operating the longest as a nitrogen prediction tool is AdaptN since about 2005, working with Cornell University, and the Agronomic Technology Corp has been working on commercializing the technology. The examples that I'm going to give are all based on AdaptN. It doesn't mean I'm making any comment on the reliability or the advisability of the approaches used in any of them. They all have common elements that are key to their usability, and that they need to be based on weather data that's accessible more or less real time, or fairly as close to real time as possible. something based on interpolated weather data from NOAA is useful. If it can be supplemented by on-farm information, it could be even better. Rainfall, farmers know, varies often from one end of the field to another, particularly in midsummer rain events. You need a credible model. You need a model that's based on science, that's published. And you need that model to be understood to some degree. The actual detailed implementation of it probably doesn't need to be understood by the user, but exactly what it's taking into account and what it's not taking into account needs to be well understood. And then accessible by any device. And I think those principles would probably any approach is going to be using this. What we're trying to model is the nitrogen availability within the soil as a function of soil nitrogen supply and soil nitrogen losses, and contrast that to plant nitrogen demand at any time through the season. First example is done by the Cornell University Extension team. Margaret Ball and Bianca Mobius-Kloon developed this as a case study published in IPNI's 4R Plant Nutrition Manual. This is a farm that has been using AdaptN for a number of years. In 2013, for them, their nitrogen rates were increased by 22 to 44 kilograms per hectare over their typical rates. And that yield, that nitrogen rate increase gave them yields that were 1.4 to 1.9 tons per hectare of grain greater than their previous yields, increased their profit by $200 to $300 per hectare. So they were quite excited about that. They had previously been attracted to the tool by the fact that on average it was decreasing their nitrogen rates and decreasing their costs without decreasing their yields and increasing their profits that way. But the other insightful comment that came from their use of the tool is that they actually spent time looking at the graphs and figures. These guys were into it enough that they applied only a small starter dose. They put on an early extra dose and then a third dose. So it's a triple split application. This is going to a higher level of sophistication than many growers are going. They were quite interested in the graphs and figures of the actual nitrogen losses as predicted by the model. And so for them, the tool was a learning tool as well, helping them understand what was happening to the nitrogen in their fields. What's more typical of the New York grower, though, very few of them are putting on just that small starter dose at front. A lot of them are applying manure, so when you're applying manure, it's often by nitrogen-based rates, supplying more or less the whole need for the crop. And the question comes up in June, have we got enough on after heavy rains and that sort of thing? So Dave DeGolier, a consultant with Western New York Crop Management, has been working with the AdaptN tool for a number of years and been able to address this question with the tool more efficiently than through the use of something like a pre-side dress soil nitrate test. Number one, in the years where you probably most need the nitrogen, where you've had excess rain, it's very difficult to go out and take that soil test. Whereas running AdaptN for the field, you can do it on the day that you have the question, on the day that the field dries up enough that you can get an applicator in, you can run the tool and get a prediction that you have some degree of confidence in. They're typically applying with a high clearance unit with drop tubes and using UAN and some form of protector to protect the urease inhibitor to prevent the ammonia volatilization. Here's June 2013 rainfall across New York State. The area in the ellipse there is New York's most concentrated area of agricultural production. And you can see that even within counties, you have very different amounts of rainfall occurring. What I'm going to give you is a couple of examples that were in the high rainfall zone, where this consultant actually implemented some check strips with and without the late side dress application here. And in this case, even though the amount applied was less than AdaptN recommended, he got a very substantial yield response. So encouraged by the fact that it was predicting the right thing at this time. So with the high June rainfall, that's how it occurred. He also had additional fields in the dry zone where there was no response. This was another field with a little bit less rain, but as well, it had... And it raised a lot of questions because the farmer had excellent soil, loaded with earthworms, it was zone till, he had a lot of cover crops, he had manure, no till injected, and by late June the crop was still looking very good in a uniform green color. By crop observation alone, he would have judged that there was no additional nitrogen needed. But you can see by those harvest stage pictures, or those maturity stage pictures, that certainly there is a difference in the growth form there. And then if you look at the yield strips, you see that field A, AdaptN actually in this case didn't recommend very much because the field was entered as a well-drained field and was predicting no response. There was an actual response, so it was fairly substantial. Field B, a response was predicted and obtained. And field C, AdaptN wasn't run, but there was no response in that instance. So this was AdaptN's 2013 version. But through interaction between the crop consultant and the scientists, they did modify it for 2013, so it now predicts correctly for the field A situation. What they needed was data. The data entry, as I understood it, was there was either a field was had tile drains or didn't have tile drains. Didn't have an entry for a field that had tile drains that were only partially functioning. And so those are kind of user inputs that can be important to prediction of actual yield response. Conclusions from the consultant. And how much time do I have yet, Chris? 5 minutes. Okay. I'll have to go through this quickly. Nitrogen is a high need for corn. From that split application, it's highly recommended because of the fact that you can make the adjustment in a later period. And he recommends always having at least 67 kilograms up front because of the fact that in New York, there's a high probability of either not being able to get into the field in June or having a very dry June as well and not being able to get the nitrogen to the corn. He does emphasize that you do need to get into the field. Sampling forces you into the field. When you're using a model, the danger is you could use it remotely and rely only on that. He emphasizes it's still important to be in the field and make sure that at least visually the field is looking like what the model is thinking that it's looking like. There were fields in what they call the southern tier of New York, that southern band, that received less rainfall. that did not respond to late applied N, and adapt N did not predict that it would respond. So the model was predicting variability based on the actual weather received there. Stabilizers, he felt fairly confident in them, but ultimately felt that most farms need to have a plan to apply more nitrogen in the event of excessive rains. Another consultant I consulted was John Dentine, who works with Willard AgriService. They're working with AdaptN as well, branding it as EcoN. Branding is important because the fact that the dealer is willing to take ownership of it is communicated, I think, by the brand as well. And it's an important thing in between the grower crop advisor relationship to have something that they're understanding there and that they're putting their trust in. They automate it and integrate it with their HiQ decision data management system for the grower, which is already a service they're providing that extends beyond nitrogen management. In 2014, they used this on 150 fields. They didn't do side-by-sides, but generally growers were pleased with the recommendations. We're getting yields up to 15 tons per hectare, but we can't say whether the model was right or wrong at this point. Why he's choosing a model-based approach compared to sampling or to sensors, he sees a lot more potential to implement commercially, and that it's more comprehensive because it's covering more of the factors that cause variability in nitrogen response. The toughest challenge in implementing it is actually getting the data from growers as to what has gone on in terms of nitrogen management, what source, rate, time, and place of application was used, whether it was manure or fertilizer. And why AdaptN? It was university-based, developed for the East Coast, and he has the scientist engagement in that the scientist behind it was willing to come down and visit several times to discuss the implementation. So, and he doesn't say that it's necessarily improved his recommendations already, but he expects that 3 years working with the tool, there will be an improvement, and would like to address nutrient interactions as well. So the key learnings are that corn growers are asking in June whether they need more N, and we need, and current recommendations don't provide that answer. There are many alternative methods, but they're very much more difficult to implement. Growers can learn from a process-based model. Data management will be a big challenge. Scientists developing the system need to be engaged in the on-farm validation. I want to change to quickly make some comments on phosphorus. There has been a 4R nutrient certification program developed in the Lake Erie watershed, and it has a criterion within it that broadcast applications of phosphorus would not be made without immediate incorporation, should not be made or recommended unless the NOAA forecast indicates that there is less than a 50% chance of a rainfall event involving more than an inch of rain beginning in the next 12 hours. Whether that has a really credible basis for that criterion, I'm not quite sure, because it certainly shouldn't apply to all soils. Different soils will generate different amounts of runoff with that same rainfall criterion there. But at the same time, it's a starting point, and it's very important, because in that basin, 50% of the phosphorus applied goes on broadcast. And when we do have rainfall events occurring immediately after a broadcast of phosphorus, the data from rainfall simulator studies show that the enrichment of the runoff water is substantial. Currently, the program requires anyone making a recommendation to broadcast phosphate has to have a screenshot saved from NOAA at the time of application to show that that criterion was met for what NOAA was recommending for that particular site. So the challenge is, can we develop a web-based tool, a safe time to broadcast phosphorus? We could probably get much more sophisticated and more site-specific if we did that. There's a big opportunity for a decision support system for phosphorus broadcasting that would work on the field level. On the larger scale as well, there's need for developing a tool that adjusts what we're measuring in terms of river output, because that's being monitored every year, and targets for loading of Lake Erie are being set, and loading reductions, and farmers are going to be held to account for them. We need to be able to make those adjusted for weather, because there's a lot of that farmers can't control. We bring everything under the umbrella of the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program, and essentially what we're trying to do is demonstrate that right rate, right time, right place, and right source of nutrients is related to sustainability in the end, the sustainability of crop nutrition. So ability of any tool to provide data that support our contribution to sustainability is a big part of building public trust, which is the main objective there. So my summary points is that on-farm validation is an essential step that we have to be paying a lot of attention. It's going to take thousands of people working at this before models are going to be readily adopted by growers. I'm not trying to negate the importance of having sound science in the model, but we also need to take into account what are the major factors in the field that growers and consultants are concerned with. Everyone involved needs some level of understanding of the processes represented in the model. We need to make them as transparent as possible. We need to have scientists engaged in that in the field, and we need to be open to the local data sources that can be provided as well. I want to thank you for your attention, and if there's any time left, I'm happy to take questions.